Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world. Hello, everybody. This is Larry Port with the Dream Job Cafe. And I'm excited to continue our healthcare series. I want to just point out this one headline before we get started. This was published in the Wall Street Journal earlier this month in April of 2026. The headline is "The Force Behind the March Labor Report, Healthcare Jobs." And the subheadline says, "Work in healthcare, including nursing, boomed again in March. The sector has provided some of the most consistent job growth since the 1980s. So we're going to be exploring all sorts of healthcare jobs because it's not just being a surgeon. Now, with me today, I'm very excited to have Dr. Nina Crowley. She is the Director of Clinical Thought Leadership at CICA. Dr. Nina, tell me a little bit about what it is that you're working on today.
Yeah, so today I have the perfect dream job for what I love to do, which is really connecting people in the field of obesity care. So I work for CICA, which is a company that makes body composition equipment, and I actually get to talk to other healthcare providers about how to use body composition in their practice, why they should use it, but then I get to bring other thought leaders into educational seminars, webinars. I have a podcast. We do, you know, practice guides, written material, all sorts of education around how other clinicians are using body composition to talk to their patients about outcomes other than weight. So this is a big thing for us, is trying to get away from just using weight and BMI to talk about how someone's doing. And so that's what a body composition scale does. And so I get to, you know, kind of bring those thought leaders to others in the market and, you know, try to talk to them about why this is a good idea for their practice.
Very cool. So what's interesting about this is that, and we'll get into your kind of like training and your background, but you're taking this and you're kind of using it in your working, you're taking your background in psychology and dietitian work, and you're kind of applying it in a corporate field. So it's not exclusively clinical work. You're kind of like working in a broader context, and you get to use like social media and all this fun stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely not something I would have put on paper as what I thought I'd be doing, but now that I'm here, it's totally matches, you know, kind of my interest and my skill set.
Oh, that's so cool. All right. And body composition stuff. Is this those machines like the ones that you put people in water, or the things with the electrics, or the DEXA scans, like trying to figure out how much fat, bone? Is that what it is?
That's it. And, you know, in a layman's terms, yes, there's a lot of, you know, kind of science to how those work and all of that. But yes, so they measure the different compartments of your body. So how, for bioelectric impedance, how fast that a current goes through your muscle versus your fat tissue.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So this is one of the things that I think is really fascinating. The fact that you're in the obesity field is fascinating, because this is a trend. This is a thing that's happening. This is like a problem in society. And what is kind of interesting about that is that, like, when you're looking at potential careers, and not to you per se, but like for people listening, like, you think about societal trends and what needs to be addressed. And here we have somebody that's like right in the thick of it, in the vortex of like a major issue that's like happening across the country. So this is very exciting stuff.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in, so you're a registered dietitian, and you're also a psychologist, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I guess tell me about your like history. Like, how did you become a psychodietitian, as you like to call it, right?
Sure. Yes. And so, you know, as you said, obesity has been a really big, you know, I would say trend is maybe not the word. It's been it's a chronic long-term disease that people have had a long time. I found myself—
Right, it's not trendy.
but it is now. It feels that way. So, you know, I can say I've been in the field for 20 years and working with patients who've had surgery for their weight. But back then, it was a much smaller population of people who've had that surgery. And so it wasn't on media. It wasn't on social media. It was kind of like an other. People were sort of like, who were those people?
The bariatric thing, right?
Weight loss surgery.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So that's sort of where I started once I became a dietitian. But how I started in that, you know, I kind of always knew health and psychology and nutrition were what I wanted to do. I majored in nutrition in my undergrad program. And then you apply for a dietetic internship, and that internship is a year-long program, and you're working with other dietitians in various different positions in hospitals and inpatient and outpatient and all the different places a dietitian could land. And then you sit for a board exam so that you're a registered dietitian, and it's a supervised practice for, you know, about 1,000 to 1,200 hours. So you're doing 5 years or so of education. They now have a master's component to that. My program had a master's. It was in healthcare policy and management. And then once you, you know, get your credential as an RD, you kind of go out and work. And I first found myself in a WIC program with women, infant, and children, and talking to them about community nutrition and education. And then when I, you know, needed to leave Long Island to make a, you know, life for myself, I landed in Charleston, South Carolina at a hospital, the Medical University of South Carolina, doing inpatient nutrition, and quickly found myself more drawn to the outpatient or more counseling part of that role. Landed in a bariatric surgery program, you know, helping patients who were preparing for and who had weight loss surgery like gastric bypass or sleeve gastrectomy, and found really quick that I needed more psychology to be a good dietitian. So that's really what spurred me to go back to school to get my degree as a PhD in health psychology. And while maybe that, you know, path isn't the most, doesn't have the biggest ROI, it definitely has made me a much more experienced provider, learning about behavior change and just all the complexities of obesity. So I think that's really been what's, you know, made me different and made me, you know, really love my pathway.
That's awesome career story. I love it. I love the fact that it was like, it was directed, like you kind of knew what you wanted to do, but at the same time, like you went with the current and it played out the way it played out. So I think people who are like lay people or aren't familiar with the field, there's a lot of people that I think are interested in this kind of stuff. But can you clear up for us the differences? Because there's like a lot of people that aren't as trained as you are. There's people who are nutritionists. There's all sorts of garbage out there. There's and a dietitian is a very specific credential. So can you talk about that a little bit, about how you might be different than others in this field?
Perfect question. I love that. So one of the things we say is every dietitian is a nutritionist, but not every nutritionist is a dietitian, because this has to do with sort of registration and credentialing, right? So you hear of a registered nurse, and that means something, right? They've done some education, they've sat for an exam. A registered dietitian has that background. You meet all these criteria for the, you know, the 4 years of your undergrad, and then you're eligible to, you know, be in a dietetic internship program, and then you do those supervised practice hours and sit for that exam. And so someone right now, almost anybody could call themselves a nutritionist. So maybe you're a nutritionist too. You don't have to have a credential to say, you know, here's how to eat, right? And so there's this very big push, especially nowadays on social media, where people love to get on there and tell you what they did, tell you what they think you should do. There's a lot of sort of top-down advice giving. And really what that's missing is, again, what I was seeking even more was a lot of people know what they should do, right? But I think the part we struggle with is, how do you put that into practice day in and day out, long term, to change your habits and to keep, you know, yourself healthy and optimal and all of that. And so the training that we get as a dietitian does, you know, kind of, it reaches in all these different areas with all the different chronic diseases, but there is a focus on counseling and how to help people change. And it's much more than just learning the facts and being able to spit them out and tell people, like, here's what to do. So it's been tough. You know, 20 years ago when I, you know, became a dietitian, there was not social media like there is now. And people really, you know, I would say, understood that they needed to come to someone to help them in that capacity. Now it's like, they just see people that they think look good and they start following what they're doing, and, oh, they're selling you this or that program, supplements, you know, all of that. And so there is some danger and some, you know, worry that we have about people listening to that and getting confused, and just the diet culture that we've all, you know, experienced. Mm-hmm. There's just so much noise in that area that it's hard because people often think of dietitians, I think, as like in a white coat. You know, you're in a hospital prescribing a diet or telling people what to eat. And there's so many more things that we do that are much more, you know, real life and helping people just understand. And it ends up being a lot less about telling people what to do than helping them figure out what they want to do and what their goals are and kind of access the information that they already know and build it into their lifestyle.
You know, well, this misinformation is coming from even the highest levels of the government right now. So it's like kind of a crazy time in this space. And like you said, like, it's not just the advice on the social media, it's the comparison that the social media brings about that's constantly in our face. So now correct me if I'm wrong. And it's maybe this is where we kind of start bleeding into the psychology element of it. So people who are dietitians, like, do they specialize, like down here in South Florida? Like, I think we have the opposite problem. Like, we have a lot of disordered eating resulting in like anorexia and bulimia and things like that. Do people tend to specialize in one of those, like that, or obesity, or how does it work with dietitians, or are there jacks of all trades, or can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. So when you get your credential, you've finished your internship, you're a dietitian, you can, you know, apply and work anywhere, you know, as a generalist, basically. There are, through our national program, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and our credentialing board, CDR, those are the groups that sort of have additional specializations. So there's, you know, a certified specialist in obesity and weight management. There's cancer, there's sports, there's, you know, there's eating disorder credentials as well. So there definitely are these sort of credential-based or certificate-based programs that you can go through to specialize. Often you might land in a position that didn't require that for entry, but getting that as part of sort of going from, you know, a basic practitioner to that more, you know, higher proficient level of practice. So we do have, things that can help us advance in that specialty field. So for me, I got into bariatrics without really knowing, you know, what this was all about. And on the job, I got connected with a professional group that was able to, you know, provide continuing education. That's another big part of the credentialed professional versus the average layperson, is that, you know, every 5 years we have to do 75 continuing education credits in the areas that we've picked as our specialty. And so we've got to keep up with what's, you know, current evidence-based practice so that we're not, just giving opinions that they're based in the science at the time. So there's definitely a lot of, additional courses, and there's tons of, you know, webinars and ways that we stay up to date with education. But there are specialties that people sort of focus in. And I hear you, you know, disordered eating has been, it's been interesting to see even how the obesity world and the disordered eating sort of world are interacting, even in just how people are reacting to weight loss and celebrities who might be taking some of the newer medications that we have available. Right. That's been an interesting topic of discussion.
Okay, so you do this and you're working in the bariatric, they rhyme, so I get confused. You're working with bariatric patients and this obesity stuff, and you're noticing this, like, you know, the psychological component. So talk about that journey.
Sure. So actually, like, right away when I started, within the first month or two, we had a research study that was happening that I got assigned to be a study coordinator of. And so I was...
Oh, how cool.
It was getting mail and stamps and numbering packets, right?
Oh, so is that stuff?
It wasn't cool at first, but actually I got so into it, and I got to know the, you know, 75 patients that were in this cohort, and we were following them for 3 years to see how their health behaviors changed after they had surgery. So it did become cool. It started out just as a task, right? But what I loved about it was I really got to know those patients. And then we started to see their outcomes, and we were able to publish a poster at a conference. And so I kind of got bit by the research bug a little bit and said, you know, hey, this is really cool. We can sort of ask a question, follow these patients out that we follow them very closely in that world, which is why I loved it, because I got to see them very regularly in the first 6 to 12 months, and then annually for life. Like, the patients are yours. That program's patients forever. Hopefully they stay coming back. So we really got to know them and follow them. And when I got into that and started going to these conferences, which I also ended up loving, which is why my current job bringing me to conferences every month has been such a dream.
Conferences can be a party. I love part conferences.
They're fun. I mean, I have a friend who labeled my conference persona, you know, big conference energy. So I do love that. And that has been a big part of my big part of how I have such a, you know, tight network and of friends and colleagues in that way. But yeah, once I got involved in that research study, that was sort of like, hey, we're looking at, it was a psychologist who was leading the study. So we were looking at health behaviors and, you know, binge eating, and we were looking at alcohol use. We were looking at all sorts of different things. And that really got me more focused on that behavioral side. And I said, you know, at the time I was editing my husband at the time, his papers, and he was in school. And I said, you know what? I'm really so into this editing and writing, like maybe I should go back to school. And so that's when I sort of found a program in health psychology that I could do while I was still working, and did that, you know, simultaneously for several years. And I think that was really for me what made me focus on the intersection of behavior and nutrition and obesity, because I had to write about it every week for all these papers. And then I did my dissertation on that study group that I had been so tightly connected with from the beginning. So I was able to look at, you know, what made someone regain or not regain, or who had regained and not regained weight 3 years later, and what were some of the factors that might have, you know, been involved in that. So it was pretty cool.
All right. I have to stop myself there, because now all I want to do is find out about the study, but maybe we can put a link to it or something like that online. So that, first of all, I didn't really realize that that health psychology. So when you went into where you're looking specifically for programs, you weren't looking for just psychology programs, you were looking for health psychology programs, huh?
Yeah, this is a good point, because there's a lot of different psychology programs out there, and you've got to probably upfront know if you want to be a licensed psychologist. And for me, I didn't. I had a license to be a counselor as a dietitian. So for me, getting the additional training in psychology, I would have had a different program if I wanted to do that against kind of supervised practice as a psychologist. I didn't necessarily want to treat patients from the psychological side. To be honest, I didn't know exactly where I was going to go with it. When I said, you know, hey, this is what I want, I saw the classwork. They had a class on behavioral nutrition. I said, that one's for me. You know, I wanted to sort of dive into that, and I didn't know where I was going to end up. And I think, you know, sometimes we think we need to know. I wouldn't have done any of the cool stuff that I thought had I really been probably super specific about what I wanted to do at that point. I just kind of said yes. And I, you know, I kind of carved this path of a dietitian who cared more about psychology, someone who was really embedded in the obesity space. And then I got to start, you know, presenting at conferences about research. I started talking about motivational interviewing, which is a style of counseling to help people change behavior based on, you know, understanding that we are a little ambivalent about change and how to work with that instead of just telling people what to do. I was able to sort of teach my fellow dietitians and other healthcare providers how to do that. And then, you know, once you present at a conference and you do a good job, they ask you to, other people hear you. And so I turned into loving the presenting and the education at that level. And now that's kind of all I do, is really working with folks in that capacity. So that, you know, all those yeses that I said 15 years ago have kind of turned into relationships and a pathway that has built where I'm at now, for sure.
That's phenomenal. So two things I wanted to call out on what you were talking about. So number one is that I think there is such value in going into an educational program, whether it's college or whatever. I mean, look, if you're getting a welding certificate, that's a different situation. But like the room to explore, the world is changing so fast, but that by the time you, from the time you enter it to the time you leave, things change. So like not having the super defined outcome is actually, I'm not going to say it's necessarily a benefit, but it's a great thing. And keeping your options open is a wonderful thing, to see how you can apply these things later on. And it always works out somehow. And the other thing is this notion of how successful you've been at conferences. I want to underscore this, because like when you go to conferences, you know, you're away from your friends, you're away from your family. So you quickly meet people at these things that become your friends and family away from home. And these relationships become pretty tight. And you go to these things year after year, or quarter after quarter, however frequently they are. And I know two people that I heard in the past month that got jobs through conference friends. So like the networks that you build you know, it's not just amazing relationships that you build and like ideas that you get to share at these places and opportunities for thought leadership, like you said, but like, but job opportunities as well. Yeah. And I don't know if you've seen that up close too.
Absolutely.
Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. I think that the value that I've seen is really sometimes going to the conference where you pay for yourself. There's a couple that I said, I have to be there. They're you see the agenda, they're talking about topics that you really want to be part of. And if your job doesn't pay for it, you might have to go out on a limb and pay yourself. But then you get there, you're listening. Nowadays, even more than 15, 20 years ago, people are talking about it online. So there's, all this social, chatter about the conference. People are posting pictures of the slides. And, there's a lot of just conversation around that. You're part of that. And then the conversations extend past the education. I'm always one that I'm there a lot for the fun and the connection, but I do go to the sessions. We do end up learning new information. And then honestly, you bring that out to you're having, drinks with friends at dinner and we can't help ourselves. We're still talking about what we've learned and how to apply that and our patience and all of that. And that just sort of builds. I actually said last night on a call with some friends, they're friends now, but they were colleagues first. Sometimes we have to stop ourselves and say, okay, wait, you have a life outside of this job, right? How's your husband? How's your boyfriend? Let's talk about your family because we're so passionate about what we do. And that's been really fun. And it's almost like I would say that freshman year of college where you're with people so frequently and it's so tight that you're just really getting to know them. If you're that type. You could also go to these conferences, sit in the back, just go to the session, go back to your room. I don't always recommend bringing your family to a conference because there's so much after the, 5 o'clock end and breaking bread with people and, socializing over your shared stuff really does build that network. It's cool. It's really fun to be with people who are trying to move the field forward in the same way that you are.
I think I want to attend one of these dietitian conferences to see what kind of food they serve. In any case,
it's a range. You can't make everybody happy at every meeting, by the way.
Sure.
So if it's too healthy, they want more, other options. And if it's too unhealthy, that has its other problems. So yeah, there's a range of food.
That Ezekiel Emanuel, one of the former, whatever chief bioethicist or whatever, he just wrote a book talking about how ice cream is okay to eat. So it's confusing. All right. So
I have lots of thoughts on that, but I'll keep to your topics.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the credentialing process. So if you want to be a registered dietitian, it's bachelor's degree plus certification. Is that correct?
It's bachelor's degree with a specific core group of classes that you take in health and, biology, chemistry, biochemistry, nutrition, in the undergrad program, and then you meet criteria to apply to a dietetic internship, which now are there's a couple different pathways, but paired with a master's. So it's 5 to 6 years after high school.
Okay. So let's say that I'm a software engineer and I've been laid off from Microsoft and I really like this stuff, but I've only taken physics and math and that kind of stuff and computer science classes. Do I take prerequisites in order to apply to a program, or how would I go about doing that?
So depending on how long out of school, I'm sure they have some limits on that, but you'd go back and do, all those health core, classes that you'd need to meet the criteria, probably some bio, some chemistry, some, I don't even know anymore. There's a whole series of courses dictated by Ascend, which is sort of that credentialing body for those programs. You'd take those, okay. You'd apply to an internship, and then the internship time, you definitely would, there's some virtual programs and some different kind of concepts now. Usually you'd have to sort of stop what you're doing and do that and pay to do that. There's a couple that sort of pay you, but mostly it's you're paying to attend to that. And then you'd go out and, be able to practice as an RD.
Is it an expensive education process, or is it something that maybe people with limited funds might be able to do as well? Do you have any thoughts on that or ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still paying off my student loan, so it wasn't cheap.
Gotcha. Okay.
But, honestly, it's been a while. It's been at least 20 years since I did mine. So,
gotcha.
But, at that time, it was probably to do the master's in addition to the internship, it was probably $25,000. So They range. There's some that are, you know, maybe not associated with the college component, and those might be a little bit less expensive, but you know, it's several thousand dollars. Hopefully, I know there's been some, you know, back and forth on which healthcare careers are supported by student loans. I haven't kept up to date on that, but hopefully they're still able to get student loans for the dietetic internship program and the master's as well.
Yeah. And in the show notes, we can post links to the Ascend credentialing body. And also there's a really interesting tool we just saw about like different credentials and their ROIs and stuff like that the Burning Glass Institute published. So we can post a link to that as well. So let's talk a little bit about the psychology component, the health psychology degree. So you did a dissertation. So is that where you got your doctorate in health psychology? Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. So the
Okay. How long was that? And is it because I think you were our first PhD that we've talked to. Is it like you have to take a core test and then you write the dissertation? How does it work?
So for the program I was in, you do usually 2 to 3 years of coursework. So it's, you know, similar to undergrad, master's, where you're, you know, in a course, you're participating, writing, learning, all of that, just, you know, very standard undergrad, master's type, but it's a little, you know, it's higher level. During that time, you're working on kind of the concepts maybe in those classes of what you're sort of moving towards for your dissertation. And the dissertation is, you know, it's a research study that you're conceptualizing from the start. So you're hypothesizing, you know, based on the theory of self-determination theory, which was about, you know, the intrinsic or internal or extrinsic external motivations. So for people who are, you know, more motivated from within versus from other people's view of them or telling them what to do, right? So you take that theory, you take that theory that you're thinking about and figuring out how that connects to what you're looking to study. And then you, you know, kind of spend a lot of time delving through the background, what's been done, why is this different? Why do we need this study? And then what, you know, using all the, you know, research hypothesis terms, you're figuring out, you know, we're going to look at this many people in this way. We've got to give them this survey or this test or this measurement and then follow them out at these time points. So you're building this whole research study and then you conduct the study. And when you're done, you're writing up sort of the results. So you've got to do, you know, a good bit of statistics if you're doing this sort of quantitative research. And so there's a big range in, you know, the topics of people's different PhDs are definitely all across the board. Mine took, 5 years, 4 years of, or maybe 4 years of coursework and a year and a half of just dissertation.
Went through that pretty quickly.
I did take a break to be like the president of my dietetic association year. And because I was like, this is really what I wanted to do from a leadership perspective. Because again, once you're doing all these other things, for me, the leadership component was big. So actually between my job now and the bariatric job I've been telling you about, I ended up being the director of the bariatric program. So that was what I did when I got my PhD. And I definitely wouldn't have predicted that. I thought I was going to go into academics or do something in research, but I ended up being much more drawn to leading my program and saying like, here's the things that I think we should be doing clinically. And so I did that for 6 years in between.
That's the interesting thing about like healthcare practitioners. It's like such a trade and such a skill, but at the end of the day, it needs to be organized. It needs to be led. You know, there's all these business aspects to it that is needed on top of everything else that's going on. So, which leads me to this one is that like, at what point did you kind of transition from the clinical role into kind of this thought leadership role?
So while I was in the director role, one of the things that I was dealing with, which is very, you know, relevant these days, was helping people get their bariatric surgery. And so that's an insurance-based benefit. And there's a lot of criteria that people had to follow to get there. And so I say that because that was how it worked, but that was also, it's very tough. Insurance companies, as you know, have lots of restrictions and there were so many things. Everybody had different sets of, you know, who sees the psychologist, they see the dietitian, they've got to meet these criteria and those criteria. We had to map all of that out. And that was a big part of my job as the director and helping our program meet criteria to get accredited year after year to be, you know, a quality program to offer surgery. So yeah, your initial comment on surgeons. I've got lots of surgeons, surgeon friends, and lots of surgeon thoughts. I do hope one day to do like a tight 10 comedy routine about my fellow colleagues who are surgeons. So,
oh no,
we can circle back to that. But yeah, after doing that for 6 years, I would say there was a bit of burnout from just the insurance process in that system. And right at that time,
so wow,
2022 was also when the newer generation of obesity treatment medications have come out. And so it ended up being kind of serendipitous timing because I jumped to this industry role and work with our folks who get body composition equipment in their programs. And it was really, the tides were kind of turning. People were finally saying, oh, you know, obesity is a chronic disease. It's not just eat less, exercise more. It's not just, you know, behavior, it's biology. But once you treat the biology, we still need the behavior. So that was kind of interesting. And people were starting to use, you know, like I said, outcomes other than weight to help say like, hey, this, you know, is this person losing all their adipose tissue or fat, or are they losing a little bit of muscle? And so like, how do we differentiate that and decide, is this a good weight outcome or is this concerning? And so it was really nice timing for me because I was able to jump in at that point and sort of, you know, help our providers understand why telling people lose weight is one thing, but actually showing them where that's coming from is a completely another. And that has become a lot more standard of practice since I made that jump. So it's been good timing for me.
Right. Okay. And I could see like body composition that led to Sika, right?
Yeah. So
is that how?
Yeah.
That-
so sorry, I took the job. The job at Sika was working with clinical, you know, folks who buy the device. I had to educate them and teach them, like, here's what the muscle mass means, and here's how you explain it to patients, and here's how you can, you know, embed that in your clinical practice. And after doing that and developing that education, we realized that sort of where my skill set was trending towards and what we needed was more not just educating people who bought our device, but educating kind of the broader community and bringing in other people's voices other than mine to say, you know, hey, here's someone who's in a clinic doing this. Here's what they find valuable, like bringing their voices to our, you know, broader audience. So that's where I do, you know, monthly webinars where I'm saying, I'm talking to a clinician like this and saying, what are you doing in your practice? How are you using body composition? Why is that better for your patients? Or why is that better for your practice? And being able to show other people that has been where that thought leadership piece has kind of come to play. And my, you know, big network of people who I've known for 20 years has been great because I know their work intimately. So I'm thinking, you know, hey, I know how this person works and what they're doing at their center. Let's put their voice out so that people can, you know, learn from them, which has been really fun.
Awesome. So let me ask you, who should go into this field? Like, who would be good? And I know you are kind of like straddling multiple kind of like responsibilities here. But like, let's talk about like the dietitian role or health psychology role.
Sure.
Like, what kind of personality traits or like would allow someone to succeed in this career? And like, maybe who should avoid this career?
I love that question. So I think the people who should go into the field, you know, if you've got a general interest in health, nutrition, wellness, I think that's, you know, maybe a little bit of a prerequisite. If your goal is to get into it, to learn the science and to tell people what to do, it's probably not for you because our behavior is not that simple. You can't, I mean,
right.
I don't know very many places where you tell someone what to do and they just do it, right? But if you're curious and you're compassionate and you can understand the human experience of, you know, behavior change is hard, right? Most people can connect at some level on something they want to do, but they struggle to do even though they know it's good for them, right? If you are curious about that and wanting to sort of say, how do I help someone move the needle on their health beyond just telling them how to do it, I think that's a really, you know, it's a really good role. If you've got it set in your head, like everybody needs to do intermittent fasting, all meat, super high, like if you've got it in your head that this is the method that people need to do, and you just want to be a microphone to tell them that, you'll probably feel burnout and unsatisfied because that's not how people change behavior. So I think that's an important distinction. But at a more basic level, I think just, you know, really understanding that human behavior change is tough and there are ways to help people do it. And I think that's really the exciting part about, you know, nutrition psychology and, you know, beyond obesity care, of course, but just how do we change our behavior? I think that's a big part of it. And who,
I mean, the one thing we didn't talk about is how rewarding it must be when you see a positive outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And and again, in the surgical realm, for people who don't know about bariatric surgery, people are losing a significant amount of weight in a pretty short period of time. And those are people who have tried for years and years to lose weight and not had that success. And so we're even seeing that now with the medications, where you're really understanding the struggle. And what's really cool about being a dietitian these days is that the biology piece kind of gets taken care of in a way with either the surgery or the medication. And the people have a varying amount of what they've known or what they've tried in the past. But now that they're sort of taking that food noise or their, you know, drive to eat, their, you know, biology pathways for driving food and eating, when you sort of turn that noise down a little bit, they're able to really start to do the things they've always known or they've always wanted to or that they've done in the past. And it's really fun to see that sort of have take effect. And then they're able to do, you know, all the quality of life things that was so important to making this a long-term behavior change. Like you can, people would tell me they wanted to like get on the ground and play with their grandkids, go on an airplane without a seatbelt extender, you know, all these sort of like functional things that made their life difficult. Once they're able to do that, it's incredible. They're really grateful and appreciative of being able to sort of be and move in the world in a different way. And, you know, you see stuff like people get pregnant who were trying for years and couldn't. So there's so much reward in that. And I think when you're approaching it from a frame of how can you help them do what they maybe have always wanted to do or already known what to do, rather than, you know, these people don't do X, Y, and Z. And if they just did that, then they could have this. If you're approaching it from that perspective, it'll be unsatisfying because you'll feel like you're just barking at people and no one's listening to you and they're non-compliant and putting in air quotes, because that's that whole sort of concept of telling people what to do doesn't work. And if you can embrace that and learn how to help people move the needle on their own behavior change, like that's the sweet spot.
That's great. And so, like in terms of this kind of work, all right, so these are a couple quick hit lifestyle questions for people who might be considering this career. You've sold them. Now they want to know, on a scale of like 1 to 10, how likely is a dietitian or health psychologist able to have a family dinner?
Oh, 10. Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean,
okay, good.
For sure.
Good. Check. What about like, could you take the family involvement a bit further? Would you be able to, on a scale of 1 to 10, would you be able to coach, let's say, a soccer team or a little league team?
I think so. Nowadays, with some of the virtual options, you know, there are people who are in a hospital 9 to 5 or 7 to 4 or something like that. You know, usually there are, you know, plenty of jobs that have a structured schedule, but there's even more now where you're doing virtual time. You're coaching or counseling people who are people who do those things too. So they may have jobs and want to see you as an outpatient evenings and weekends. And so there's definitely some really good options, especially, you know, for any kind of a counseling profession to do that outside of regular business hours.
Okay. Gotcha. And then this is, I don't like to talk turkey on these things or financial stuff, but so what I do is I do the Disney World test. And so like, if you're going to Disney World, A, can you afford a trip to Disney World with kind of a dietitian salary? Let's say it's like 5-7 years out of school. Should you be staying at the budget hotel, the medium hotel, or can you go all out and stay at the Grand Floridian?
Mm. This is how we know you're from Florida, yeah?
If you go to Hilton Head.
Okay, so let's see. I find if you're a Disney person and that's where you want to be, that's the nuance to it. This is a psychologist's answer.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, you could do that. You could go for the medium route. You know, you might go for the, if you're me, you go and you invite all your friends to stay with you. So it's more fun and then it's a lot cheaper. I've been known to invite, you know, my friends to these conferences and be like, oh, wait, I invited somebody else. Well, we'll all stay in the same room anyway. Middle of the road. I mean, there's what I think is I absolutely love dietitians. I think we have a really diverse and incredible skill set to be in all sorts of leadership roles that are beyond what we can imagine as just clinical dietitians. I just, there is a gap between that, I think, and how much we get paid. So I would say it's, there's a big role too for advocacy for better salaries and really trying to figure out where we fit into, the system in that way. But without numbers on it, I think that's probably where we stand.
Okay, very cool. And let me ask you this. You also have a podcast. Tell me a little bit about your podcast.
Sure. So my podcast evolved from just saying, hey, when we go to conferences, I want to talk to my friends who were speaking before of it. And afterwards, like, what did you learn? And so we did this, virtual thing where we're two faces talking about it to make some social media content for our page. And then, after a few of those, someone's like, that's a podcast, right? Like, oh, yeah. Well, I'm a huge podcast listener and consumer. So I'm like, yes, let's do it. Let's practice. Let's try and experiment. And so it evolved into that. It's called In the Know with Nina. It's, conversations between me and other healthcare professionals who are kind of operating in this space. It's loosely based, of course, on body composition. It comes back to that a little bit, but it's more about what are people doing in the space? What do they find, works with their patients and what's cutting edge in this field? Again, there's so much now. How are they applying it from whether it's obesity or cardiometabolic health or even functional medicine and fitness, how are they using outcomes other than weight to sort of help their practice and help their patients? So yeah, and I've got, I think, 73 episodes now, which has been a really fun learning experience.
Congratulations.
I feel like I've arrived at least at that number, enough to have a nice microphone, right? So
very good.
It's been fun.
We like it.
I'll share you the links, Nina, too, so you can put them out there.
We'll definitely put them in our show notes and so on and so forth. It sounds like you have an amazing career where you help people and you're super engaged with your colleagues and you love what you do. So thank you so much for being with us today. I really, truly do appreciate it.
Thanks for giving me a platform to talk about it. Go dietitians, yes, and psychologists.
So if you like this podcast, please like it, share it with your friends. And if you can, please be grateful for something today.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.